Here we go. The teeny tiny lady who's in the pickle jar being brought in by, Andre Gregory today. So switching off back and forth. That is the lady that chooses the letter of the day. She lives in a pickle jar. She's a tiny, miniature, but loved here by everybody that listens to the Tom and Curly Show because she has such power, Tom. She's brought in a wooden wagon, and Andre Gregory, who you might remember from My Dinner with Andre.
Of course you do.
He has got the honor of bringing the teeny tiny lady in. As they get closer to the microphone, we can listen into the conversation they are having.
The closer you come, I think, to another human being, the more completely mysterious and unreachable that person becomes.
The answer is yes!
I mean, you have to reach out. You have to go back and forth with them, and you have to relate.
What?
You're relating to a ghost or something.
Wow. This is deep stuff for the teeny tiny. Hanging right in there. All right, I want to thank Tracy Taylor, who's in there. My kids FaceTime me. They're jumping a car for the first time.
Uh-huh.
Positive to positive, negative to negative, and they got all rocket all scary because it was sparking.
Which is what it's supposed to do, right?
She's so sweet, though. She's like, okay. Okay, that's the right way.
Okay. And did the car start or we hung up in the middle of it?
She hung up, but that's okay. I said, if you have another problem, here's my number if you call me.
Wow. You get Tracy Taylor to help.
Sorry,
jump
Dad.
In your car.
That's all right. No, I'm perfectly happy with that. Good. All right. So the mayor of Seattle wants to allow you to live for rent-free for 3 months. What's that?
No, she was against this.
Well, she could have, because she tried to veto it, but she knew she didn't have the votes.
That's
so
right.
She just let it go.
So the council voted for this, a moratorium for 3 months mm-hmm. over winter evictions if you meet certain criteria, like don't make more than X amount of money.
Yeah.
And she was opposed to it and said, no, you shouldn't do it. She could have vetoed this.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, she decided to let it go into law without her approval.
She went 7-0, right?
Yeah, it was. So six votes are needed to override her veto, I think, and so it would have been overridden.
Mm-hmm.
So she decided, why, pick a fight when I'm going to lose anyway. So her proposal was instead to spend $200,000 on eviction prevention
mm-hmm.
and make this moratorium needless. Well, she decided, maybe like King Solomon, she decided to do both.
Ah, that's just splitting the baby in half.
Exactly. Except this one, she put two babies together. She said, okay, you can have your darn moratorium, but I'm also going to spend $200,000 on eviction prevention services.
Uh-huh. Ah, good.
So,
well, they have the money set aside. You can apply. And the way it normally works is it costs about $1,400 per person that's going to get kicked out on average. The person goes and applies for it. It's about $1,400, saves a lot of time, a lot of money, because then you don't have to start the whole eviction process. You don't have to go to court. It's a good little program they have in place. The thing is that you have to have a legitimate reason for why you are not able to continue to pay the rent.
Okay.
If you want to get in there and just steal from the landlord, which I think a lot of people will do, I'm advising
a lot
you
by a majority.
I don't know, but enough so that the landlords will get
are
stung
concerned,
by it.
Yes.
So what you do is you stop paying in November, then you don't pay November, you don't pay December, you don't pay January, and I think you get one more free month, right? So you screw them in November, but then you get December, January, and February as freebies. So you're in there for 4 months rent free, and then you leave.
Yes, then you're kicked out, and the rent still accrues. They have to eventually get their rent. But
how
if
do
you
they
don't
do that?
Well, I mean, they're charged with it. Now, if they abandon it, then that's going to kill their rental credit.
Oh, really?
So, yes, there are consequences. This is not meant to be free, but it's seen as a humanitarian thing like they do in Paris.
And what's the difference between this one and Paris, Tom?
Right now, in Paris, they have a fund by which landlords can retrieve their lost rent.
Well, that seems to make sense,
yes.
Doesn't it?
Well,
we don't have that here, though.
So I'm wondering, what about taking that $200,000 for eviction, retention, and instead use that as the honeypot that landlords that get screwed over by this moratorium can access. I mean, that might be a compromise as well.
Certainly would cover them a little bit more. I don't know how many people will take advantage of this and just live for free.
And you still have to jump through hoops to live for free, as you put it, which is that you have to then apply. The landlord applies for eviction, then they have to respond in writing that they are not they're using the moratorium, eviction moratorium. Then now all the cases that they cited for this legislation were people that were down in their luck for a month or two, but they just need to get back on their feet. It'll be interesting. This can be another one of those experiments. If it turns out that, let's say, if you have 100 eviction notices, how many of them are going to be relieved of having to be evicted and then stay in place, or how many of them are just going to, as you seem to assume, are going to rip off the landlord?
Yeah, if you get a chance to rip off the landlord, you do, and this is an opportunity for them. No, of course it is, Tom. Listen, if you really want to pay your rent,
it makes your life worse. If you end up getting evicted, you may be in there for those three winter months, but then your life is noticeably worse. They'd rather be staying. Most people would rather stay in a place and have shelter.
How many people got evicted? What'd they say in the winter months? Was it 31 or 131? It was some number like that. It wasn't that much, right? Most people are not evicted because they're not paying the rent. And it's such a pain to try to evict somebody. The amount of work that has to go, you take them to court and then try to get the thing, you never get the money back. I mean, it's just a great big pain in the butt. Here's what'll happen. If you make under 54,000? If you're a single person making under $54,000, you cannot get evicted during the winter. Or 57,000, that's what it is. You don't make under 57,000, you can stay there during the winter months. But anything above that. So the landlord will go, how much money do you make? And the person goes, I make 52,000. Okay, you know what? I think I just rented that. And who did I rent it to? I rented it to somebody that makes 58,000. And the reason I rented it to that person, because I could kick that person out if I needed to.
We'll have to see if that is how these things operate. If they don't solve any problem and everyone figures out a loophole that it's not manageable, then maybe we'll go the Jenny Durkin route and just use $200,000 for retention services.
Oh, you're going to expect a 7-0 city council to reverse their charitable move to the tenant that the tenant doesn't get kicked out in the winter months.
Well, I don't know if they'll reverse it or not, but if 100% of those people end up screwing over the landlord, I think that there could be a good reason not to, because we've got various options. Shama Sawant was in favor of this. She was the one who first proposed it.
Mm-hmm.
She's not complaining about the $200,000 going for retention services.
She didn't care about that.
That's all to the good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we'll see.
Well, here's what it'll be. It's such a small amount of people. The news will not do the story on the landlord, because the landlord's the bad guy with the black hat. The first person that's in the apartment is the person with the white hat. News doesn't do stories on the landlords getting screwed.
On this particular thing, John, they had a lot of landlords that were they were showing up at the city council races. They were interviewed by the newspapers. I mean, at the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if this turns out to be terrible, I don't think it's going to be that bad. I think it'll be interesting to see how many people screw the landlords over versus how many people were helped out.
Why wouldn't you?
Because you have a livelihood that you want to stay. There's no wants to get kicked out of an apartment.
Tom,
it trails you.
You're talking about a responsible individual that cares about the choices.
That's right. Most of these people are responsible.
We don't need to get into how many percentage thing. I'm just saying, generally, from my experience with people that make bad decisions about their life, they don't do a lot of down the road thinking. If I do this down the road, it's going to affect me later on.
Yeah.
They just make bad decision after bad decision. And if they can screw the landlord out of 3 or 4 months of rent, you know, not that they're thinking about screwing the landlord, it's that they'd rather spend their money on something else because it's, you know, in delayed gratification. They're not thinking, how will this affect my life?
Okay, well, first off, John, if you're doing any kind of criminal activity or something, I mean, you have to play by the rules, and they had time after time of people. No, you can't.
No, but landlord's not allowed to ask about criminal history, right? In the city of Seattle, you cannot ask about that anymore.
No, but if you're committing a crime, you can get evicted. I don't care if it's January 1st or December 25th. So there are restrictions about who is justifiably applicable under the eviction notice.
Well, the good news is that, two good things. One, 12 years from now, we'll all be dead because of climate change. Plus, it's getting warmer and warmer and warmer, so we're not going to have much of a winter, so that's going to be fine. Listen, you should do the thing. If it drops below a certain temperature, what if it's 52 degrees out? Is that winter? It's going to be 60. We're still in winter, by the way. It's going to be 60 in 2 days.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's rainy, and it still gets cold. I'll have you know.
60, Tom.
Coming down on a bus.
As the Marines used to say, it's okay to be cold, it's okay to be wet, it's just not okay to be cold and wet. That's a Marine thing right there. Write that down, buddy.
Okay. Well, you can be cold and wet all the time in
Seattle. Semper Fi. Okay. Let's see. They've got them. They've got these guys. I think they say that's in how many? There's like 80 people in 20 different crazy extreme right Nazi loser groups across the United States. And there's one of them, I think they've got like four or five losers that are here in the United States, here in the state of Washington, and they've been able to track these guys down.
Well, yes, they've arrested four of them.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them at least have Washington roots out of the four.
And the U.S. attorney says that they've announced the arrest today.
Four men were arrested earlier today for conspiracy to harass and threaten journalists and members of the Anti-Defamation League who are openly critical of their neo-Nazi movement to which all four defendants belonged. One of them, Cameron Brandon Shea, was arrested in the Seattle area early this morning. All four defendants will be prosecuted in this district by my office. The First Amendment does not protect speech if it's accompanied by acts that are taken in furtherance of that hatred and the intent to intimidate and incite violence.
You can't say, I'm going to go get you, which apparently, and it was sort of in, you know, couched. The guy over at King 5, what's his name, who got this threat against him?
Chris Ingalls.
So Chris Ingalls did a story on one of these guys about their guns, and the guy got the gun taken away. Was that Caleb Cole, the 22-year-old?
A small arsenal from Cole, claiming he was preparing for a race war. They broke into his home and arrested him.
These are a couple of losers, right, that have guns, because they're allowed to have guns.
The Autumn Waffen.
Yes, and then they go around talking about it's going to start a race war. They take some video of themselves, these losers, and then they said, well, look at this. You're writing stuff. You're saying stuff. You're putting up posters. You went to Germany. You went to Auschwitz. You were doing the German salute. You're a loser, and you have guns. So then they said, looks like this guy who's saying he wants to do all these terrible things, let's do a red flag move on him. So they went in and took his guns away, correct?
Which guy?
The 22-year-old, Caleb Cole? J. Cole.
Yeah, this was earlier. Yes.
So Mr. Cole loses his guns, and I guess he's upset, and he then blames King 5? Some of them come after
Chris Ingalls was the reporter who went down there to cover this story.
Okay.
And so they're supposedly terrorizing them. Now, you call them losers.
They are losers.
Okay, that's fine.
It's a small, teeny, tiny group of losers.
Timothy McVeigh was a loser.
Yeah.
Timothy McVeigh did a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. Historically, one of the worst terrorists, if not the worst terrorist example here. So these guys, I just think by calling them losers, it's too dismissive. These are violent extremists.
They espouse violent extremist stuff,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Are they any worse than Antifa?
Yes.
How?
Well, they've been arrested for all of this stuff. Antifa, as far as I know, the only kind of times that Antifa is in the news is when they get in a brawl at some of these rallies. I've never seen any Antifa arrests like these.
Oh, how about the 60? Well, they didn't arrest him. They shot him because he tried to blow up a 500-gallon propane tank.
Bad, too, then.
Right. That's the guy that the Antifa guy, the 66-year-old guy that they killed when he was trying to blow up the tank. So I'm just saying the difference is that these, I'm saying they're losers. I would say put a Timothy McVeigh into the same loser category.
Okay.
Right? But they're going to start a race war. How many groups are there? There's 22 guys or there's 80 guys in 22 different groups across the United States, small little groups of losers that have guns that put stuff up on the thing, right, and they say terrible things and they're going to start a race war. How are they going to start a race war, right?
And they say the United States government is determined that they are of more danger in this country than international terrorists. The domestic terrorists are a bigger threat, and this is an example of them cracking down on that.
Here's the FBI director saying,
today the FBI took an important step in countering what is seen as the top domestic terrorism threat facing our nation today, racially motivated violent extremism. The subject arrested here this morning and the other subjects arrested around the country posed a legitimate and escalating threat to anyone who dared counter or try to expose their activities.
How about those Israelites about a month and a half ago in New York City or in New Jersey went in and shot a bunch of people, Jewish folks that had some sort of, were they doing Shabbat or something
like
that?
Israelites?
They call themselves the Israelites. You don't know the group?
I mean, I don't know. I don't understand what
that's a terrorist organization as well that actually shot and killed people, or at least shot and injured people, right?
I don't know. Are you defending these guys because they
just pointing out
shooting and killing?
No.
By the way, this is what they're.
There's plenty of losers, Tom.
They're encrypted communications. He was encouraging members to, quote, go full McVeigh in starting dispatching political and economic targets, helping build the social tension that will accelerate the collapse of the system. Timothy McVeigh managed to do a lot of damage, and he was practically a lone wolf. He had a couple of guys helping him. In this case, it sounds like you're not taking the threat seriously. Is that what your response
no,
is?
No, I'm just saying that we're saying that these are the worst guys and that they, again.
Domestic terrorism. Yeah, domestic terrorism. Believe that?
Well, I think they've gotten these guys, right? What have they done? What have they done other than put posters up? Now, the one guy is accused of shooting and killing a gay high school student that he went to school with. The one guy, they think they got the one guy for that, right?
Okay. I mean, I still, your point is that they haven't gotten around to doing anything bad, so no point in arresting Timothy McVeigh for having guns that he shouldn't have because he hasn't blown up the, Kansas City yet.
Yeah. No, what I'm saying is that they, the FBI, wants to say, look at this, we're cracking down on these guys,
Oklahoma
right?
City. Okay.
The FBI is saying we're cracking down on these guys, right?
Yeah.
This is it. These are the terrorist groups. This is the worst terrorist group right now.
I don't know. Why would you say it's the worst? It's one of them. They say domestic terrorism is the number one threat here, and now we should be celebrating this.
Okay. Then he goes on to reiterate what beyond free speech.
The FBI recognizes all citizens' First Amendment protected rights. However, the subjects arrested today crossed the line from protected ideas and speech to illegal acts of intimidation and coercion. We will not stand by idly while you attempt to undermine the freedoms for which our nation stands.
Okay, so one of these guys, he and another Adam Waffen member were arrested with possession of firearms. They were wearing tactical gear, driving with four guns and 1,500 rounds of ammunition, and they weren't allowed to even have the guns.
Oh, okay.
So these guys could do damage, but
sure.
You're right. We caught them. We should be celebrating the fact that we caught them early. And I think the interesting question now is that one of the four guys is named Shea. Matt Shea has been accused, the representative, of being a domestic terrorist or advocating for domestic terrorism. I wonder if that's just a coincidence that
I'm
he has
sure
the same
is.
Name. Okay, I hope it is.
I hope you're right. All right. Tracy Taylor.
Yes, sir.
Hello. Any more calls from my kids?
No. Nope.
Did they get the car started?
Did they call you?
I haven't heard, so
okay.
Good job. Thank you.
No problem.
All right.
Happy to help.
Do. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text. State Roofing text line at 98973. And thanks so much to Lake Washington Windows and Doors. 50% off for having a huge sale.
Wow. Well,
yeah. Still time to shop. That special someone. Imagine that. Come home, there's a whole bunch of new windows and doors. That's a way of saying happy birthday to somebody.
I don't think it happens overnight, but still, it's a nice gift.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. That's Lake Washington Windows and Doors. Hey, by the way, don't forget to go to mynorthwest.com/win. We're giving away a chance to win a day trip for two, Victoria, B.C., right there on the Victoria Clipper. Quaint bistros, an afternoon tea. Plus, you can book your trip, and you can find more information. Go to clippervacations.com. Plus, also two tickets to Dave Matthews Band. This is going to be Friday, September 4th at the Gorge. You want to find out more about that and the schedule, davematthewsband.com. You go to mynorthwest.com/win. And you might find yourself winning both of those, right? Victoria, B.C., and then Dave Matthews. There you go.
Sweet.
All righty. The story goes that poverty is about personal stress, not laziness. So many people, recent poll about 3 years ago, they asked Protestants and Catholics and religious people, mm-hmm. are people poor because of their own inability to be able to pull themselves up? And 64% of Protestants said yes.
That's that Protestant work ethic.
Catholics not far behind.
Come on to roost. I know.
Catholics not far behind, about 57% to 61% said, yeah, that's you're poor because of the choices that you make. That's why you're poor.
And a lot of people feel that way. In fact, in this article analyzing this kind of this new thinking about poverty sort of wraps that up, that all, you know, people wouldn't fall into poverty if they didn't do these dumb things. If they would only delay marriage and delay childbirth and stay in school and work hard, then these kinds of things wouldn't happen. And to take that next step farther, the problem with the welfare programs, and I've heard this a lot of Republican economists have argued this, that welfare programs are counterproductive because they don't inspire somebody to pick themselves up by their bootstraps. Mm. Instead, they kind of, they couch the delivery in such a way that they say, oh, why should I bother working?
Mm-hmm.
According to this new body of research, they argue now that that's the deepest misunderstanding of what the lives of the poor are really like, and that instead of things like laziness, it's the personal stress of how precarious their lives are. I've never heard this word, precarity, but I guess it's the state of having a, you know,
always
being
on edge.
Precarious,
yeah.
Yes. And the problem they say is that they realize that any misstep, any piece of bad luck can lead to these disastrous consequences, that uh, it the kind of stress of not knowing where your next, you know, meal will come from,
yeah.
it that leads to cognitive impact, and that stress is what hurts you and make ends up leading you to make bad decisions and like, and it becomes, you know, this kind of we've often talked about this. The one bad thing happens to this woman. She can't, you know, she loses her car, which is, you know, her only means of livelihood. Mm-hmm. She can't afford to get it out of storage, in effect. And so she ends up going on the streets and all these kinds of things, these circular things that stress. The argument is stress taxes the mind more than the lack of finances does, because you're stressing out about how am I going to keep living.
Mm-hmm.
That's the theory.
And you often do not have the skills to understand how to get yourself out of bad situations, because no one has ever shown you that. Plus, you also have additional stress on top of you, because most likely you do have a child. Most likely you do not have a high school education. Most likely you have done some time in jail. You have so many barriers that have been presented to you by being dealt a bad hand at birth. Your mom also didn't have a father in the house, and you never learned to get to up to an alarm clock. No one in your house ever had a job. So you are just a product of a really bad environment, and now all of a sudden you are just recreating the same life that your mom had, and you're really up a tree.
And yeah, and it weighs on you. One of the interesting suggestions here, because right now there's a movement afoot, and a lot of well-meaning people are behind that, which says, listen, if you are going to, in effect, go on the dole or get welfare, if you're able-bodied, you should work for it.
A means test.
Yes. Yeah. The suggestion here is that, no, that actually just throws them back into that same kind of rat race.
Mm-hmm.
That it would be better off if we just gave it to them without strings. That would reassure them mentally that the stress would go away. Now, a lot of people might think, well, that's why? They haven't deserved it.
Mm-hmm.
The argument that's being made here is that, no, that will repay us, meaning society, in spades if we could sort of relax people. They were suggesting that they like this idea of, we've talked about this before, cash bail being abolished for nonviolent crimes, mm-hmm. for these people, so they don't have that, because that compounds things. Make it easier to get an ID card. Police in poor neighborhoods should reduce the number of tickets given for minor infractions, like a broken taillight or speeding. Evictions should be more difficult. If their lives would be more settled,
uh-huh.
they would be able to progress. Now, that goes against the grain of a lot of people, processing work ethic, being a philosophy among them, that probably would throw shade at this.
Well, you make
poverty impedes cognitive function. That's the name of the article that's this being based
if on. You allow them to become dependent and you don't give them sort of the dignity of work, there's a great yeah. organization called the Doe Fund. It's in New York City, and they start by pulling you out and you clean the streets, and then you go from cleaning the streets to working in a restaurant, into a bakery, and then you do this and do that and do this. I've told you about this. They interviewed this one guy, I forget, maybe it's This American Life or something, mm-hmm. and the guy has on a piece of paper his first paycheck, which he carries around in his mm-hmm. wallet, and somebody's asking about his first paycheck. And he said, no, you don't understand. That is not as valuable as this. And with that, he has a picture of a text that was sent to him. And the text said, Gary, come in. We need you this afternoon. Okay. Do you understand why that's more valuable than the paycheck?
Because he's never been needed before?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. You go to Fair Start, which is right here. They teach guys homelessness. They take you from homelessness to working within 18 months if you work through the program correctly. And they used to have these graduations on Thursday night. And these guys stand there. They're 45 years old or 50 years old. And they stand up there and they say, I have never, ever accomplished anything in my life. And I am 50 years old. And I have failed everything I've ever done. But I made it through. And it's this, they have dignity in work. There
yep.
is no dignity standing in line where the government treats you like a child and they give you not cash, but they give you something like cash, which is a card, which then says what you're allowed to eat and what you can't eat. And they treat you like you are dumb and you are a child, and they treat the poor like idiots. And that's the way the government does. There's no dignity in that, but there is dignity in work.
Well, okay, but what if someday they can't work? Then they're thrown. That's the problem about being conditional on work, is that adds to the stress level. There's more stress and risk if all of a sudden, okay, I can only eat, I can only afford to live if I have work. And what if something happens? What if I go on a bender? What if I break my leg? What, all these kinds of things.
Yes.
That this argument here is that just adds to the stress, and it creates this never-ending kind of whirlpool.
There has to be some sense of accountability. Do you know what the sickest nation is in the United States, in the world, that calls in sick more than any other?
Calls in sick. So it must be an industrialized nation, mm-hmm. right? Calls in sick.
Yeah, who's the sickest nation, sickest country in the world?
Well, calling sick and being sick are two different things.
Exactly. It's the Swedes. 20% of Swedes call in sick every single day. Yeah, you know
Swedes?
Why? Because they can. And they do. And they get cash for it. And they don't have to be at work.
Well, that
they
might
be
good,
they are the sickest
then.
Nation. It's so strange. Now, why are they so sick? I thought they were so healthy.
They
tell you why. Because they get paid not to go to work. So they're basically just bilking the system.
And then what do you mean? They are. That's the essence of the Protestant work ethic is up in Scandinavia.
There's enough young ones now that realize, you know what? I don't need to go into work. I'll just call in sick 20% of the time.
Or maybe one sick. Of the things is they actually are sick and they know better than not to call in. And then they don't take as many sick days.
No, they are sick, Tom. Very, very sick.
Oh, I can't believe you went all the way to throw Sweden under the bus.
Why not? You know what? Why not? Bernie would probably bring them up.
First off, that goes against the grain of the whole philosophy of this topic, John.
That topic is you are stressed out, so you make bad decisions.
Poverty impedes cognitive function. I love that.
Jimmy Tucker adds, one second. John, you are also poor based on choices you have as well.
You also are poor based, yes, but how do you get out of that? You get out of that by trying to relieve the stress and maybe people can get their feet under them.
Let's check with Tracy Taylor.
It's just a philosophy, Jimmy.
I want to thank Rick for listening to the show. I saw him this morning, early this morning. Apparently we make his afternoons, Tom.
Is that right? All right. Hi, Rick.
There you go. All right. Here comes that mailman. Mr. President?
I don't like people.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman.
I'm the mailman. Teeny tiny lady.
Hello!
We've got that letter of the day. We're going to get to all of them. But first, let's take care of the rest.
Well, it is Ash Wednesday, everybody. And Janelle wants to let us know, Janelle in the 206, Ash Wednesday service at 7:30 p.m. at Sammamish Hills Lutheran Church.
Still time.
You're welcome, John.
Thank you. Amber in Seebeck says they are doing drive-through ashes for many churches, so John might be able to go. No way. No way.
It'd be efficient. And 253, I'm getting mine at the 7 p.m. service.
Thank you, 253. Okay, 425. John, your socialist fear-mongering is getting old. Well, everything I say is getting old. By the way, I'm not afraid of socialism.
Yeah. Oh, you're not?
No,
okay.
No. I mean, when they start rounding you up and killing you, that's a problem. All right. It is safe to assume that corporate socialism, that's been very prevalent in America for decades now, is exempt because your side is very much in favor of this type of socialism. I think that you mean socialism for the rich is okay, but capitalism is for everyone else. You know, like the Wall Street bankers getting bailed out, corporate subsidies and tax breaks for the rich.
Uh-huh. And Ryan from Redmond, is it just me, or is Bernie saying he'd like to set up African Americans and Latinos to sell marijuana? Incredibly racist.
No. Huh? Debate continued. Oh, that's Andy from Road Less Travel. You'd read that.
You want to read that? Okay.
Yeah, too much stuff.
Hi, friggin' ho, fellas.
Yeah, see,
happy
right
hump
there.
Day. Am I right, fellas? When John asked Tom if he'd vote for Bernie before Trump, Tom's reply was spot on. So here's a truncated list a la Letterman of what I'd vote for before Trump. Number 5, a wombat drunk from eating rotten papayas. 4, a genetically modified circus monkey.
Okay.
3, Dr. Scholl's insoles worn by a long-distance runner with a garlic obsession. Number 2, Dr. Scholl, what the hell? And the number 1 thing I'd vote for before I'd vote for Trump, Bernie. Warren, Biden, hell, maybe even Curly.
Wow.
That's all, folks. Have a great week and go Dragons.
Okay, 360. So you lost me again with announcing your support, Bernie over Trump. I might not ever turn you on. Wait a minute. That 360, that's Tom, not me.
Yeah.
Will you turn half of us on?
Yeah.
Tom, you're sinking the show.
Yeah, you think so, huh?
Yeah, I do.
425, I'm crying with laughter.
This is when you were screaming over each other.
We're both trying to rejoin in the debate.
Yeah, we're doing Uncut Gems.
And somebody else writes, I just turned the radio on. What the hell are you clowns doing today? We were
apparently I'm dragging down the show.
Yeah, that's all right. We lost 360. That's one. Can't afford any more. Rick, hopefully keep listening.
On the corona, maybe he was being funny.
No.
The coronavirus.
Oh, no. Well, we've...
John, he had a script, Tim in Seattle. Nancy Pelosi ripped it up.
And now it's time for the letter of the day.
The letter of the day comes from 253. I get off easy at the Presbyterian Church. Late night ashes. That way no one sees them and I can remove them in an hour later at home. Jesus still loves me.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
Didn't write no more.
No. Didn't write no more.
She left the gloom a-hanging round my front door.